This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello, everyone. Yeah. Hi. Happy Thursday. Hope you guys are staying warm. Kira, do you mind giving us a roll call, please, and then we'll get started after?
Morgan Baker. Genevieve Bansoff.
Here.
Duncan Katie.
Here.
Pedro De Silveira.
Here.
Dylan Eisman.
Here.
Annette Gleiberman.
Here.
Payne Gronemeyer.
Here.
Deepak Elongo.
Here.
John Jiang.
Here.
Andrew Wan.
Here.
Joanne Kim.
Excuse.
Amari Lampert.
Excuse.
Claudia Leung.
Here.
Yananawi Logan.
Here.
Manaya Lewis.
Here.
Luna Liu.
Here.
Benjamin Lacau.
Here.
Joseph Mullen.
Here.
Nicole Overton.
Here.
Nikki Reddy.
Here.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Here.
Michelle Song. Claire Templeman.
Here.
Valeria Valencia.
Here.
Henry Wade.
Present.
Adele Williams.
Here.
Everest Yon.
Here.
Annalia Nunez. There's 25 members present.
So 25 members present, Kira. Awesome. Thank you so much. The time is 4:49, and I'll call this meeting to order. Just a few reminders before we get started. No side talk, and please talk into the mic so we can get the recording up, and no tech unless needed. Great. Now moving on to the land acknowledgments. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigono, the Kuyga Nation. The Gaigono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gaigono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigono people past and present to these lands and waters. Thanks, everyone. Now we'll move on to late addition to the agenda. I have one, so I'll get that and then pass it off to you, Representative Valencia. We have an oath, I believe. Yep, oath of office to Benjamin. So Benjamin, hi, welcome to the essay. Do you mind going up to the podium, I like to call it, so we can swear you in?
Yeah, congrats.
Okay, Benjamin, thanks so much for being here. So I'll just say a few things and repeat after me because that's the oath. So it starts, in view of the trust Cornell University has vested in me.
In view of the trust that Cornell University has vested in me.
As well as my personal sense of honor.
As well as my personal sense of honor.
I, your name, do solemnly affirm on this.
I, Benjamin Luckow, do solemnly affirm on this.
The 18th day in November in the year 2021. I'll repeat it.
Yeah.
The 8th day in November in the year 2021.
The day, the 18th of November, 2021.
To fulfill my responsibility as a student elected.
To fulfill my responsibility as a student elected.
Representative. I will engage in open and honest debate.
I will engage in open and honest debate.
In a process where I am guided by truth and fairness.
In a process where I am guided by truth and fairness.
I will never purposely misrepresent facts.
I will never purposely misrepresent facts.
In an effort to achieve my goals.
In an effort to achieve my goals.
If a conflict of interest arises.
If a conflict of interest arises.
I will relinquish my right to participate.
I will relinquish my rights to participate
in the decision-making process.
In the decision-making process.
I will seek out and voice effectively.
I will seek out and voice effectively
The interests and concerns of the student body.
The interests and concerns of the student body.
Address the issues of my fellow students.
Address the issues of my fellow students.
And strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students.
And strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students.
Signed, your name.
Signed, Benjamin Lockett.
Awesome. Welcome, and thank you so much, Benjamin. Congrats.
Thank you.
Great. And Representative Valencia?
Yes. So, can you hear me? Okay. I have a resolution, and it's proposing a charter amendment for the 2022-2024 byline funding cycle. I can add it to the box, and then we can discuss later. But yeah, it's a change to the charter for the byline funding cycle, specifically on the deadline to submit the documents.
So you're motioning to amend the agenda to add a resolution?
Yeah, and since it's a change to the charter, we won't vote on it today. We discuss it today and then vote on it on next week's meeting.
Awesome. So is there a motion?
Yeah, motion to add.
Awesome. All those in favor, please raise your plaque. Okay. 22. All those opposed? And all those abstaining? 22. That's 24. Does someone? Manai is of the. Okay, great. Do we get anything from the chat? If not, Manai, if you don't mind, I'm going to count that as. And abstaining. She raised her hand for affirm.
Yes.
Great. So that's 23-0-2. That passes, and we'll add that to new business. Representative Valencia.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. And it's in the box. So when we get there, you can pull out your laptop. Great. Any late additions, Representative Katie?
Yeah, I'd like to add. I realize it's a little confusing because we have to consider timing. But I'd like to add a nomination for the Office of Ethics. I think it might make more sense after announcements and reports, but I'm not sure exactly how long it's going to take. For clarity, this person is at work right now, so won't be able to come to our meeting until 6 tonight. And so I prefer to see it around 6:30 if possible.
Motion.
So I motion to add that to the agenda, nomination of the Office of Ethics. Preferably, I guess, after announcements and reports.
Is there a second? All those in favor, please.
Do you have a name for the nominee?
I don't have it written down now. I don't have it in front of me right now. But Morrell. It's actually Joanne's nomination. I'm just helping her with it. But because Joanne's not here. But I'll be able to chance to talk to her today, and we also aren't voting today. It's just merely to put it forward.
Great. That was the second. We're not in voting. All those in favor, please raise your placards. That's 23. Okay, 24-0-1. That passes, so that goes under after byline reports from Representative Valencia. Thank you. Anything else for late additions? Awesome. Now moving on to consent agenda. We're going to skip the President Pollack's decisions part because I'm not sure if President Anonye submitted, and we don't even have 25 resolutions. I think that's about, we don't have 35, we have about 32. And so that's a mistake on my part, but I apologize for that. So just move on to the approval of minutes. That's okay with everyone. Great. Is there a motion for the approval of minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes by unanimous consent.
Great. Any dissent? That passes. Thank you, Representative. So that's great. Now moving on to open microphone. For community members, if you have anything to say, any questions, any announcements, please feel free to step up to the podium. But this is for non-SA or community members. Great. Seeing that there are no hands, I will close open microphone and move on to announcements and reports. Today we're expecting President Pollack and VP Lombardi, and it doesn't look like they're here yet, but I'll give you a rundown of how things would go. Actually, I take that back. Perfect timing. Yeah. give the rundown? Yep. So the rundown is that President Pollack and President Pollack has about 15 minutes of prepared remarks, which you'll give in the beginning. And towards the end, we have about 10 to 15 minutes for Q&A. The questions we submitted before was used to prep these remarks. And so when we get to 10 to 15 minutes of questions, I'll call on SA members to ask their questions. And please don't be repetitive with your questions. If you think President Pollack has answered it in her speech, don't feel the need to ask again. But President Pollack, thank you so much for your visit to the SA. We're super excited to have you here. And I don't want to take up too much of your time, but we were told you have about 15 minutes for your prepared remarks, so we'll give you the floor, and whenever you're ready. Again, welcome to the SA.
Last 55, and VP Lombardi will be here momentarily. He was at another meeting.
Perfect, that's great.
I can't see a thing because they're fogged. It is really great to be here in person. I know that the last year and a half are just been extraordinarily difficult for everyone all over the world. And here, of course, faculty and staff and students have dealt with remote teaching and learning, limitations on travel and in-person gatherings, in some cases illness and even the loss of family members and friends. And then, of course, just last week, along with our peers at several other Ivies, we had a bomb threat and then a shelter in place a few days later. I'm going to say more about, more about all of that in a minute or two. But I have a number of important topics to update you on. I'm going to have to go through them briefly because to cover everything you asked me about. I do want to say a word about our new freshman class. We have a record 3,750 students. That's part of the planned growth that came along with the opening of NCRE. It's a spectacular class. They come from 64 countries and 49 states. I'll let you guess which state we need to do more recruiting. No, it's Wyoming. We need more recruiting from Wyoming. 19.4%, this is a record number, are first generation. 55% are women. 28% identify as underrepresented minorities. And nearly half are receiving need-based aid. I am so happy to have them in person, along with a number of our sophomores, for whom this turns out to be their first year on campus in Ithaca. I want to say a quick word about sustainability because I know that's of interest to many of you. It's a key priority for us. We have this goal of being a carbon neutral campus by 2035. And what I'm very proud to say, the Sierra Club has something called the Cool School Ranking. They rate schools on things like energy, air and climate, transportation, and engagement. And Cornell this year ranked fourth. So we're the fourth coolest school out of 312. So I'm very proud of that. And you also see our commitment to sustainability in the amazingly energy efficient and resource efficient design of those NCRE dormitories. They have high efficiency rooftop solar panels. They have high reflectance roofing, 12-inch thick insulated walls, water conserving plumbing and fixtures, state-of-the-art LED lighting with occupancy and daylight sensors. Just generally very, very sustainable and efficient. In case you're wondering, the plans are on track for the rest of the project. That beautiful dining hall should be open for the spring semester, and the three remaining new residence halls will be open in the fall, next fall. I also know that people are interested, well, what about all the other dormitories? And we have embarked on a comprehensive whole campus, university-wide 20-year strategic housing reinvestment plan to systematically address deferred maintenance in all the older residence halls. Begin as soon as the NCRE construction is complete, and it covers both major renovations, like what's needed in Balch Hall, and then updates in other buildings that don't require such extensive work. The pandemic, obviously, is unfortunately still with us, but thanks to our exceptionally high community vaccination rates, 97% of the Cornell campus is vaccinated, our cases have stayed low. We do continue to follow both the science and state and federal regulations. Everybody's asking, when can we get these masks off? Right now, federal guidance and state law require us to have masking in indoor settings. I know it's frustrating, but we do have to follow the law. I want to thank everyone for how responsible you've been overwhelmingly throughout the pandemic. What you're doing is what's keeping us learning on campus and in person, so thank you. Now, the pandemic, of course, has added stress on not just physical illness, but mental stress. And so I want to talk about something that I've talked about at every single student assembly since I arrived, and frankly, is a topic of discussion at every president's meeting I go to, I'm sure at every meeting of the vice presidents for student life. This is not unique to Cornell. It's top of mind across universities in the country. And that, of course, is mental health. It's been a priority for us for years. Given the data on it about race among university students nationally, we can expect, unfortunately, that between a quarter and a third of our students at Cornell will experience a mental health challenge in any given year. And like all of our peers, we continue to spend a lot of money and to focus on enhancing our mental health resources, but we recognize that there's still a lot more to do. We're continuing to prioritize emergency access, so students who need immediate same-day care for crisis level concerns are triaged and then connected with evaluation with a dedicated team of CAHPS urgent care counselors. Beyond that, right now, the wait time for non-emergency access appointment is about 7 days, and for students matched to short-term individual counseling, the wait time is about 2 weeks. Now, I want to point out that a recent study for mental health professionals in major cities in the U.S. showed average wait times of 25 days, and the national average for behavioral health services is 48 days. So my point is not that this is good, this is bad, but at 7 days, 7 to 14 days, we are well ahead of the national average. And the reason there's that wait at all is because there's a national shortage of therapists. We're working very, very hard to meet that challenge, to hire more therapists. During the first 2 months of this semester, CAHPS was understaffed, but as of September 30th, CAHPS began contracting with a telehealth provider called Mantra Health to provide additional therapy and psychiatric support. Contracted telehealth services have also allowed more students to access providers of different identities, including therapists who are people of color. We're continuing to hire therapists, but I do want to point out that our staffing ratio does already surpass national guidelines. Actually, we have significantly more therapists based on our student body size than even the aspirational goals set by the International Accreditation of Counseling Services. So we need to think beyond clinical care, and that's why we've set in motion the approach that began with our mental health review in 2020. We are working both to improve the mental health services we provide, and importantly, to take a more holistic look at student wellness with the goal of addressing the causes of the stress that lead our students to seek mental health care in the first place. Work is going on to address all of the stresses that were identified, from a culture of competition, a lack of balance in students' life, a lack of social connectedness, and so on. The recent bomb scare and shelter in place added to everyone's stress, and I want to say a few words about those incidents. Now, I'm old enough to have been through lots of these kinds of emergency situations. Everyone is different, and no matter what you prepare for, there's always things that are unexpected, and there's always lessons to be learned. So we always do an after-action analysis. That's going on right now. We are carefully reviewing everything that happened. We are carefully listening to the feedback we got. The biggest challenge is always communication. So while these incidents are going on, we're getting information. We're disseminating information from law enforcement and others in real time. But I got to tell you, it's always changing, and it's evolving rapidly. And our priority is to provide updates in a timely fashion so that our community is aware of the situation and can take steps to protect themselves. And I understand that the community always wants more detailed information and they want it as quickly as possible. It's hard not to know what's going on. But we always have to balance three things: accuracy, speed, and detail. Those things are often in conflict with each other. You can put out a lot of detail, but if you do it too quickly, it's not going to be accurate. What you can be very accurate about very quickly is not going to be so detailed, and so on. And we always need to balance that. As the event is going on, our focus has to be on safety, whether that's issuing a shelter-in-place order or evacuating and cordoning off an area or whatever. And the last thing we want to do is rush to share information that turns out to be incorrect and therefore can unintentionally cause greater distress, greater confusion, or even physical harm. So essential information goes out immediately, and the fuller picture as soon as we have that. All that said, as we're doing this after-action analysis, we know that particularly during Tuesday's event, there was confusion, for example, about what parts of campus were under the shelter-in-place order and about the status of classes and prelims. The situation was evolving off campus, it was under the purview of the sheriff and Ithaca Police Department, not the Cornell Police Department. We were taking direction from them. They were telling us what the shelter in place perimeter is, and it was changing, and it was changing again and again. So we are, as I said, reviewing everything, including our communications with the sheriff's office, and we're thinking about how we can be more specific and clear in our messaging. A couple of more points on this. First of all, while those two incidents were close together, they may feel like a trend, but in fact, they were not related. One was a pool hoax, which appears to have been propagated by some young people very far away from here, and the other only involved us geographically. We were not a target. I do also want to say a word about why we didn't cancel classes last week, because that has come up a lot. Canceling classes is not a simple thing to do. Some classes have multiple sections and they get out of sync. Some classes have labs that are sequential, and if a student misses one lab, they can't do the next lab. Some classes are such that a student has prepared for a presentation or a test, and a delay would add to their stress. And that leads to the second reason, which is that canceling classes is not uniformly desirable. It would have been more stressful for some students. We heard that from some students. It might have been feasible in some classes and not others. We're big, we're complex, and there's no one-size-fits-all solution. So I think, as everyone knows, the provost and Vice President Lombardi wrote to all the faculty, and each college and school also wrote with specific information, specific suggestions. They urged flexibility, and the college and school ones, in fact, gave lots of detailed examples of what could be helpful. But it's really important to allow the faculty to make these kinds of decisions based on what they know best, the overall plan of their course. Now, I do want to mention one more thing about all this. Incidents like these don't only impact students. They impact the whole campus community. And we can't just shut down the whole campus. It's not a matter of just canceling classes. Everyone is impacted. But dining staff have to be there to provide food to students. In fact, during the whole episode on North Campus, our North Campus dining staff were there preparing food and had to be there to prepare food to feed students that evening. Cornell Health needs to stay open. Lab animals need care. Trash needs to be taken out. The IT systems have to continue to be monitored. We're pretty much like a small city, and you just can't shut down a whole small city. That's why snow days are so rare. So that's what happened. None of this is meant to minimize the fact that these episodes could have been scary and stressful, and different people will understandably have different reactions based on their life experiences. So if you were struggling after last week's events, I really hope that you have accessed Cornell resources that are available or have found support in other ways that are meaningful to you. Okay, let me turn to my last two topics, which have to do with university finances. Some of you, many of you, I hope, have seen the news about our endowment returns. It was a truly remarkable year. We had 41.9% of growth in our investments, which is the result of a number of factors. There was a very robust market, but also our investment office did a number of things. They restructured our asset classes, they reduced fees, and they implemented a rigorous risk monitoring system and rebalancing framework. Some of you may or may not know how endowments work, so let me tell you. The endowment isn't just this big pot of money that we can spend. The endowment is actually 8,000 separate accounts, almost all of which are restricted to a particular use by a donor. So a donor might give us some money, and they say, I want this gift to pay for an undergraduate scholarship. And then the earnings from that money can only be put to an undergraduate scholarship. Moreover, these gifts are intended to be permanent. So the money that they give us needs not only to pay for someone's scholarship today, but we need to invest that money in a way that the earnings pay for that scholarship today, and then, that's part of the earnings, and then the rest gets reinvested so that we have money in future years to cover that cost of scholarship, including inflation year after year after year after year. And it's also important to remember that endowment growth is very volatile. That 41.9% growth this year is really just about unheard of. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Last year, the growth was 1.9%, which was less than inflation. So to ensure that the funds from endowment achieve their purpose of providing us with stable resources in perpetuity, we're very disciplined in what we spend. We use a payout formula. We pay out about 5% each year, and only under the most extraordinary circumstances do we deviate from that. And when I say we, I mean our board. It's something that I'm not authorized to change. Only our board of trustees is. Last year, in fact, the board agreed that the pandemic had created truly extraordinary circumstances, and it approved a really exceptional one-time increase in the payout. to help cover both things like our coronavirus testing lab and some of the additional aid that we provided to students to replace the summer savings expectations when jobs weren't available. I can say more about that in the Q&A if you like. But in general, what I want to say is that it's our board's responsibility and our responsibility to ensure that Cornell has the resources not only that we need today, but that we will need to survive as a great university for the next 150 years or more. And that brings me to my last topic, which is where does the endowment come from? For the most part, it comes from philanthropy. We've got very generous donors who contribute money that supplement the tuition you pay and the money we get from the state. And so periodically we launch a philanthropic campaign to try and raise even more money, sort of a concentrated effort to do this. We've just publicly launched our newest campaign. It's called To Do the Greatest Good. This is a phrase that was used by Ezra Cornell himself 156 years ago. He said that he wanted to do the greatest good and to do it for posterity. And he decided that the way to do the greatest good was to found this university. So we've started this campaign to do the greatest good. We have very ambitious goals. It's going to go on for another 5 years. And we hope to raise $5 billion, $3 billion for Ithaca, $1.5 billion for Weill Cornell Medicine, and $500 million for Cornell Tech. And the priorities that we have include, first of all, educating students to be leaders who carry that Cornell ethos out to the world. Second, tackling the greatest issues of our time, things like global sustainability, like social and economic equity, like technology and society, and much more, all that research that your faculty do and that many of you, I hope, are involved in. And third, engaging with others to create knowledge with impact. Those things are all very important for undergraduates. They support the very type of education you came here to obtain. But I also want to highlight one other goal, and that's student access. It's a key part of what we're doing. We have a goal to raise $500 million, $500 million, for undergraduate financial aid to do three things. The first is to increase the number of aided students by 1,000. So we're going to be growing the student body by 650 with the opening of the rest of the North Campus dorms. And we also want to shift so that overall we'll have 1,000 more aided students. Second, we'll do that in part by reducing costs and in particular decreasing debt burden for students by 25%. That's on average about $5,000 over the course of a student's career. And third, for lower income students who typically have no loan packages, we want to ensure at least one summer in which their summer savings expectation is waived so that they, like their peers, can participate in internships or similar kinds of activities that are so important for their educations and their careers. I'm very excited about this campaign. I really do believe that it will ensure that Cornell can be one of the greatest universities in the world, can continue to be that, that you, when you become alumni, can all be proud of it. I actually think it can be the model of a leading research university in the 21st century, precisely because of our commitment both to human diversity, any person, and intellectual diversity, any study. And those are my updates. Thank you.
Thank you so much, President Pollack. Before we turn to Q&A, VP Lombardi, welcome to the essay. Were there any prepared remarks you have before you move to Q&A, or do you want us to jump to it?
No, thanks. Thanks for the welcome and happy to jump to Q&A.
Absolutely. Awesome. So in terms of recapping how Q&A would go, please feel free to raise your hand, SA members. I'll ask Parliamentarian Carson here to help with the time. So for SA members, I'll give you about 45 seconds to ask your questions and 2 minutes answer for President Pollack and VP Lombardi. So I'll go first. Representative Katie.
Hi, President Pollack. It's good. Right here. Yeah. I'm one of the other UA representatives, so we talked last time. I'd like if we could talk a little bit more about the same question I asked last time. So it's what do you see as really the next steps in moving forward to answering student concerns relating to mental health on campus? Last time we talked a little bit about this broadly. I'd love if we could get a little bit deeper into the numbers, because I think a big part of your message is Cornell going above and beyond. You talked about us meeting a lot of the national standards around mental health, but how can we make that next step for students for the sake of mental health on this campus?
Yeah, I'm going to let VP Lombardi answer this because there are a lot of details here. As the only thing I want to say is this is something, you know, the reason we did this very extensive mental health review was so that we would have guidance from the community about what would help. And I'll let you talk about that.
Sure. I appreciate the question so much. One of the things that we've been trying so hard in this review is not just to look at reactive approaches to supporting student mental health, but actually proactive as well. And admittedly, the staff has been taking on much of that work. We have not pulled students into the conversation of implementation. Students completely shaped the report and the findings about what we needed to do start to finish. In terms of the implementation, we were really taking that on our shoulders to do that work and make sure that those things happen. Where I think we can do better is by bringing more students into that process, at least from an understanding of what steps are taking place. We have a website, it's got a million things listed there about all the, you know, all these codes about what we've accomplished, what we haven't accomplished, where we are. But I think, and I was just talking with my colleague to the Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, the Vice Provost for Graduate Education, myself, about how we pull students into that implementation. We're not for you to do the work, but for you to understand everything that's happening there, because it's really broad and very, very comprehensive. So that's what I think we need to do. Too much to say right here and eat up all the time, but would very much like to
I'd love to discuss more with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katie and VP Lombardi. Before we move on, just I'll turn it over to Carson to just talk about how he's keeping track of time.
Hello. For those of you who are giving questions on the student assembly, I'll give two signals. This one is when you're at 30 seconds, so you have 15 seconds. This is when you have 30 seconds left. This is when you have 15 seconds left, if that works. And then for President Pollack and Vice President Lombardi, when you have 1 minute left, I'll give this signal, if that works. 30 seconds left, this signal, and then 15 seconds left.
We can't see, but we'll try to say it.
Okay.
Also, could I ask when you're called on, because I don't know your name, could you raise your hand? Because with the mic, it's hard for me to see who's asking the question.
Perfect. Noted. We'll do that. And don't forget to speak into the mic. Representative Wade.
Hi, President Pollack and VP Lombardi. Thank you two so much for coming in. My question kind of touches on to the financial aid aspect that you mentioned during your speech. You kind of talked about removing one of the summers that students are expected to save in hopes that they can put that money towards an internship. What's the reasoning for why Cornell has that fee, especially sort of in recent years, how it seemed that the school was able to waive it?
Yeah, I mean, it's purely a matter of finances. If we took that away, it's basically offering each student an extra $3,000 of financial aid, and we don't have that. That's why we're raising money to enable people to do that. We were able to do that during the pandemic in part because we got CARES Act funding, and I have the numbers here. I don't have them in my head, but the first year we got $6.4 million in CARES Act funding. We put that all to that summer savings expectation. In fact, we actually spent out $7.5 million. That's part of that extra endowment spend that I told you the board approved. And then last year we got, it was no longer called CARES, it was called PERF 2 and PERF 3. And again, it was federal funding that enabled us to do it. So it's really just a matter of finances.
Thank you, VP. Representative Wade and President Pollack. Representative Williams.
Over here. Hi, so I wanted to touch on the North Campus residential expansion and the planned updates. So you said that this is going to be like a 20-year plan to update all of them. I guess my concern is like, are there any plans to adjust housing costs, or how is this going to be displacing students, and then why exactly it's going to take that many years?
Sure, I'll take this one. I've been working on this ever since I got here. The reason the whole plan spans 20 years is just the scope of the problem. How many buildings, how much construction and renovation that is. You can't take more than one building offline at a time because you would displace so many students, even with the new buildings that have just opened. So we have to do one building at a time. Just to give you an example, Balch Hall, which is first up, I think, as you know, the construction alone on that will take 2 years. Just to do the renovations that we need to do. So they take a long time when you think of how many residence halls we have on campus that need work. Now the rate structures, what I will say is Cornell does not differentiate rate based on the quality or newness of housing. Not all schools are like that, but we felt strongly and have felt strongly. This decision was made before I came, but I support it, that if you do that, you begin to see a socioeconomic stratification among your students. Students who can afford to live in newer residence halls do, and those who can't don't. That doesn't feel great, at least to me and to some people. I'm not saying everybody, but so that's a decision that we have made. So it is important going forward, and the president mentioned the 20-year plan, which is all about the major renovations, is that in addition to those that really need to be totally gutted and redone, that we are doing annual updates in the building so that students, maybe if they're in an older building, are at least feeling that they're refreshed cosmetically. Maybe it's new carpet, new furniture, new blinds, things like that, that don't require quite as extensive as renovation, things that can be done in the summer. So I want to come back either to this body, or I'd be happy to do with you and kind of show that plan and even give an example of things that are planned for this coming summer. Would be glad to do that. I'm watching my time. Thank you.
Thank you, VP Lombardi. Representative Mullen.
Thank you. I just want to address the Greater Good campaign. While it's great that the funds are being raised, I am concerned, and I know a lot of students are concerned, about funds that are being directly given to Cornell Tech. Considering Cornell Tech's relationship to Technion, which is invested in the illegal occupation of Palestine, can you address Cornell's international partnership with institutions in occupied Palestine?
Yes, that issue has been discussed a number of times, and I actually just reject the premise that is what is going on in the Technion, at least in our interactions with them. I am not an isolationist. I think that it is very, very important that we remain involved in countries around the world. Often this question comes about, why are you staying in China? There's no question but there's repression in China. But I think it is just crucial that academic institutions maintain ties, person-to-person ties, student-to-student ties, faculty-to-faculty ties. We need that to make the world a better place.
Thank you, President Pollack. Representative Andrew?
What's my last name? President Pollack. Hi. So thank you so much for coming here. So one of the things that I wanted to ask is on the broader scope of kind of everything we've talked about and specifically pertaining to like emergency response things. I think one of the biggest things that, you know, we see is that kind of this slow movement, like the after action report that you said, like, isn't done yet. And theoretically, you know, I guess that's a sign of bureaucracy and, you know, slow moving parts. So specifically with emergency things, how do you plan to like reduce bureaucracy and increase that communication, like while still ensuring the quality of that reporting?
Yeah, again, I mean, it's been a week, right? These were two big episodes within a few days of each other, and they didn't just involve us. They involved the first one, we had to bring in law enforcement from all over the region, and for the second one, we were the secondary. So I'm not convinced that a week's delay to do a serious, thoughtful after-action report is a sign of too much bureaucracy. We want to be comprehensive. We want to be detailed. We want to look at what happened. That's really, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I would. I emphasize what the president said, but I also take your point, and I don't want the notion of the fact that, oops, we're doing this thorough after action to suggest that there wouldn't be immediate changes. So, we've been talking on the communication front as an example, right? How do we think about shortening the time between notices? Or, for example, and I received some criticism for this, and I accept that, about why didn't folks hear from me? I happen to be on campus that Sunday. I was on campus. And what could I do? How could I be communicating, aside from the police notifications, to share additional information to students that might be helpful? So things like that, we've already thought about how we could put in place before this more formal report would be finished. So I did want to just emphasize that.
That is very important. But I do want to, we want to be thorough, right? And sometimes being thorough. Sorry.
Thank you both. Representative Zeberman.
I want to quickly say thank you for your response about Cornell Tech. I really appreciate that. My question is about the mental health review. I know various colleges have been working together to implement those in CCTB. So I was wondering about if there is any idea of the timeline for those recommendations to be implemented, and also ask that I'm fortunate enough being a student assembly member that I was reached out to one of these boards to join it. But I would ask that anyone who can ask that more of these colleges invite undergraduates, because I am the only undergraduate student on the engineering schools. And I think I don't know the makeup of other schools, but I think they could really benefit from having that undergraduate voice there.
Yep. I take that suggestion to heart, and we do want to engage more students in this process going forward. Just to answer your first point about the timing of those, it really does vary based on initiative. There are a number of things that have already been accomplished. Broader conversations around academic policies, et cetera, I don't know if those are some of the ones that you're a part of, but you know, there are faculty involved, and those will continue through the year and then make a recommendation at the end of the year. So the timing varies for each one. But again, I think that's where if we bring students closer to where we're at in the implementation, those will answer some of those questions and transparency.
And I want to add one. This comes from my professional background. I think this is a matter of what in computer science we call iterative refinement. This is an incredibly challenging problem, and it's a challenging problem all around the world. And what we don't want to do, excuse me, is wait for the perfect solution, right? That would take forever. What we want to do are roll out solutions, get feedback, fix them. You know, this is this iterative refinement process. I think that's the only way we're going to be able to move forward.
Thank you both. Ravi, no, ex-official member, Delilah Hernandez.
And my office strives to pretty much connect students to resources and accompany them through any problem that they face at Cornell. And one of the issues that really came up pretty recently, and a lot of students expressed this, was that the Title IX office is not accessible, especially in regards to its location. So I guess I'm wondering if there's any initiative that has been taken into account, or like any work in terms of like moving the office to actually make it accessible on campus.
I want to just clarify your question. You mean physically accessible given their geographic location on campus?
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't heard that, and I can't speak to it, but I think it's good feedback and would be glad to take that back to the Title IX coordinator. My hope would be there'd be some accommodations made in terms of being able to set up meetings that are accessible, but I will follow up on that and check on that. Thank you. Can I just write you back directly?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you both. We have a question from Zoom from Representative Lewis. She said, whether the university has considered having pre-scheduled emergency mental health days, just in case such an emergency in the future occurs, the institution has a pre-scheduled emergency day and can use that just in case something happens.
So one thing I want to sort of clarify, there was a lot of talk about how last year we had mental health days. But remember, the reason we had mental health days last year was because we didn't have spring break because of the pandemic. So that doesn't mean it's a bad idea or that we wouldn't consider this idea. But I do want to clarify, it's not like snow days. It's not something we've ever had before. When we decided not to have spring break, we added a couple of days to give people some time off, and those were called mental health days. I don't know about any conversation about that. Of course, if you did something like that, it means you'd have to have the semester go a day longer. And that's always tricky because people want to get home for the holidays. But we'll take it under advisement and talk about it. I had not heard that suggestion.
Thank you, President Pollack. And Representative Jiang?
Thank you, President Pollack and Vice President Levin for coming. As you mentioned, the Cornell Endowment had a phenomenal year. We had at least increased by $3 billion U.S. dollars. According to the 5% rule set by the U.S. government, that means that at least $150 million will be added. However, the financial situation around the world has been suffering significantly. Additionally, many students had complained to the SA about a complicated and bureaucratic process they're experiencing when they are engaging with the university. Therefore, my question is whether the university is open to provide financial support to student activity fees, or in another word, to provide financial resources directly to the student assembly to solve and address students' concerns. Thank you.
We're in the process of putting the budget together now, but typically the student activity fee has paid. I mean, this has been a mechanism for covering student fees. If we take the money out of there, to be completely honest, there's less money for mental health, there's less money for deferred maintenance, there's less money to hire the faculties you want. So we can think about it, but it's always trade-offs. There's just lots and lots and lots of demands on our money. And one of the reasons I wanted to explain the endowment is, the endowment is not like a checking account where we can just take money out of it. First of all, we have to spend it. We have to make sure we only spend enough to keep over many, many years. Secondly, all the money that's in it has to be spent for the particular purpose. And third, in order for us to be fiscally responsible and make sure we don't have peaks and valleys, we actually average our money. The amount of spend out is not the amount we have today. It's averaged over 7 years. So we're not even going to see all of that increase immediately.
Thank you. Representative Overton.
Thank you, President Paul, Vice President Lombardi, for joining us today. My question is, thank you for explaining yourself, but my question, I as far as I voted, the concerns of my constituents is about the fact that the university only has one psychiatrist. So I was wondering if the university has any action plans to maybe increase the number of psychiatrists at the university. And also if the university currently has any action plans for Terry's emergency day of mental health appointments, because there's currently, I believe, a 7-day wait period for any scheduled mental health appointments. And to me, that seems like a lot, especially for people who need immediate services. Thank you.
Sure, I'll say a couple things about that. One, the president emphasized that although for scheduled appointments, that's correct, we're about a week's wait right now for an access appointment. There are emergency appointments available on a daily basis, and we do encourage those to be used. We set aside staff every day to make sure that's the case. In terms of psychiatry support, we have currently one psychiatrist provider, two psychiatric nurse practitioners who can also prescribe, and we also have contracted two additional psychiatrists online through a third party that we've contracted to provide support as well. Now, those two additional are telehealth only, to be clear, and those are some of the supplemental staff we've had to add recently when we had some of these shortages. So we are trying to grow this space and enhance that. One of the things I will just say as an aside that's been beneficial for doing some of the online and the virtual is we have been able to further diversify our staff. We have two psychiatrists of color now on those virtual staff, and that's a first for us here at Cornell. So that was a positive movement forward. So thank you for your question.
Thank you, VP Lombardi. We only have like 2 more minutes with you, so I'll pass it off to Representative Leon to lead us to the last question.
That's a lot of pressure. So I have a question slash a comment about something that you said during the remarks. Like, you mentioned that there's no like uniformly desirable solution when it comes to stuff like canceling classes, which like I definitely understand, but I feel like right now the way that it is, which is pretty much just professors getting a suggestion to be nice to us, is not exactly fair to students who would need a break like that. Like, I think we're putting a lot of, you mentioned trusting professors and their judgment, and I feel like a lot of people, I'm lucky I haven't had this experience, but a lot of people have had experiences where their professors don't prioritize their mental health and aren't flexible and lenient. Why isn't there a way to hold professors accountable to that if this is the system that we're going with?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good question. First of all, I wanna counter the idea that we just said be nice. The schools and colleges did actually send out a lot of suggestions. But, you know, the way universities work when you come to a university like this is we give a lot of autonomy to our faculty. We believe that the faculties are the experts, not just in their fields, but in the delivery of their education. And we don't tell them what to do. And when you take, even absent the recent experiences, some classes are harder and some classes are easier. Some professors are more lenient and some professors are more stringent. Some professors do a lot of in-class work and make it very easy to get a good grade. Other professors do a lot of in-class work and make it harder to get a good grade. Some professors do very little, you know. So no two people are going to be alike. And while we can urge our faculty to be flexible, I'm not naive. Some faculty aren't going to respond that way. But we certainly hope that most of the faculty will take that guidance. And more importantly, that they will do what's right given what they know about their class.
Awesome. Well, President Pollack and VP Lombardi, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it. Have a good break.
Have a great evening. Thank you.
Can I say real quickly, Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday. I think personally that one of the most important things you can do to feel good about yourself is to show gratitude. So I hope you all have a really, really wonderful Thanksgiving and also that you get some really good food.
Thank you, President Pollack. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, and for your good questions and participating and all of that. Really appreciate it. So before we move on to Representative Valencia for the reports, does anyone else have an announcement? Just to recap what announcements and reports are, it isn't always byline reports. So like if you have an announcement about an event or initiative you're working on or need help or have a question, like that would fall under announcements and reports. So with that being said, does anyone have any announcements or reports? Ex officio Hernandez.
Hi, OSA is hosting an event on Sunday from 3 to 5 right across the hall here. So we'll be having free photo shoot events. And then this might be a question. This is a question, but does anyone know who runs the Students Helping Students applications for emergency grants?
I'm looking the wrong way. Okay, I will talk to you later.
Great, there we go. Awesome. And then who else? Carson or?
Hello, I'm the parliamentarian, for those of you who don't know. I'm working on an initiative right now to rewrite the standing rules for the next semester. I would love all of your input if you can find any inconsistencies between the standing rules, the bylaws, and the charter. Please send them over to my email account, cdt65@cornell.edu. Also, as always, if you have any questions on parliamentary procedure, that is also where you can send them. The goal is to make all of those documents consistent with each other so that there's no confusion as to how the essay is going to run. Thank you.
Thank you, Carson. Okay, Rep. Katie.
I got this one. Yeah, I just got some quick ones from the UA meeting that was this past Tuesday. Initially, I was going to recap some of what President Pollack shared with us, but obviously that was pretty similar discussion. Other than that, just let anyone know we're moving forward on, or we're in the early process of moving forward on an initiative with the Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and Environment with adding new trash cans around the campus, possibly using smart garbage, which are those like solar panel ones. If anyone's any interest in that, love to get you guys on board. It's in the infancy, but it's really exciting, looks pretty cool, as well as some conversations about lighting, which is obviously a big concern of a lot of SA members. The UA is very actively looking to get involved with that. Same thing. It's the more students who want to get involved, the better. We'll bring you into UA committee, bring you across with UA meetings. It'd be fantastic. So if you have any interest in getting involved, please let me know. Sadly, Jacob and Anneli are not also here to plug it, but you can also let them know as well. We've got some good stuff coming with that. So if you have any questions, want to get involved, let me know. You'll have my email, phone number. So yeah.
Thanks, Rep. Katie. Any Representative Mullen?
Yeah, just an announcement to anybody in the community, but also all SA members. Our first scheduled office hours, which we had discussed previously, doing office hours to hear constituent concerns will be Tuesday next week, the 23rd, and that will be in 438 URIS. We'll also have another one the next Tuesday after that. So if you're not able to make this one, the next one is available.
Representative Jiang.
All right, thank you. Just a very quick announcement. So as those of you who are in the either APSCON or the diversity committee, you will probably already know beforehand that I'm currently working on trying to get an essay special funding project for the Chinese New Year next year. I'm so far working really hard with, I'm going to meet with the CSSA leadership on Sunday and Monday, and hopefully we can come up with the final numbers, how much they need, how much in short for, and then as submitted to the appropriation committee as soon as possible, and then bring up to the SA as a whole. And throughout the process, if any of the members have any questions, you are welcome to come to me. And at the same time, in the end, I hope that the entire SA will support in the end for the project. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Eisman.
Hello. Oh, hi. Okay. I just want to give an update since we had our first Educational Policy Committee meeting this past Monday. There has been a proposal put out by the provost for offering, actually being the first Ivy League institution to offer a part-time bachelor degree for undergraduate students offered directly by the university. So this is a very big project in very early stages. And if any of you have any input or questions or comments or concerns that you'd like me to bring back to the committee, since it's mostly comprised of faculty, I really appreciate it. It's a great opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Eisman. Representative Gronemeyer, did you have something? All right, perfect. And Representative Williams?
Yeah, I was just going to say this really quick. I didn't get the chance to do this announcement last week, but I just wanted to thank you guys again for signing on to the letter we wrote. I think it was really powerful that we got all the SA members at the time. Fortunately, I didn't get you. But I just wanted to thank you guys for that. Yeah, great. Thank you, Representative Klugman.
Hi, so really quickly, an update, actually, never mind.
Sure. Okay, great. Anyone else? Cool. Now, Representative Valencia, if you wanna kick us off with the violent announcements.
We can get laptops up, right? Chair? Yeah? Point of privilege, can we get our laptops out now?
Yeah. Wait, this isn't the resolution, but yeah, you can. Yeah, because
the report. Resolution is also
yeah,
online.
I perfect. Get it out.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, so today we will be hearing from two organizations. First, if you can take a look at PFC's report so you can have like a background on it. So just as a background, PFC got 50 cents last balance cycle. This cycle, they asked for $1, so a 50 cent increase, and the Appropriations Committee recommended completely defunding them. But now I'll pass on the mic to the representative from PFC.
Hi, everyone. My name is Allison Ng. I am the PFC's Diversity and Inclusion Representative for the past year. And we got a recommendation to be defunded, and I just wanted to give a couple arguments as to why PFC is an important organization on campus, what we're continuing to do, and then why we are requesting this $1 of funding. So really quickly, PFC is a relatively new organization. I think we were started in like 2019, and then obviously like COVID hit, and so there hasn't been as much impact as we would have liked, but we're still organizing a lot of events. And I know one of the concerns last time was that PFC hasn't really, or the professional fraternity organizations haven't served all the students on campus. And obviously, like, this is true. Not very many organizations serve every single student. But I do think that professional fraternities do have an important role in developing students and their leadership skills and also their career development and stuff like that. And I can, like, talk further about that if any of you guys need. But basically, like, as a new organization, obviously it takes time to, create culture change. And I do understand definitely that there's, like, kind of like a culture of like, I guess, elitism and kind of exclusivity within professional organizations. But in order to create change and in order to also like, we can't enforce any of the recommendations that we create for professional organizations. But I think that, you know, kind of to incentivize other professional organizations, funding is necessary, and it is necessary to create change and, you know, host events. And also the fact that not a lot of students have been impacted by professional organizations, I just think that's untrue. And even though like a lot of students do apply every single semester and, you know, potentially get rejected and whatnot, I think that organizations still offer multiple opportunities to get to know their members, to get to have resources and career advice, along with, you know, like offices of career services within each specific school. And so I do think that PFC as a whole is an important organization to the school, and it is necessary to kind of create change that we all desire within these professional organizations. And I also know that a lot of students have had good experiences within, you know, their specific organizations. And so I just wanted to ask you guys to all reconsider the funding that you guys want to recommend for PFC, even if it's not the $1 or even like 50 cents, anything. I feel like it's important to create all this change. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Now moving on to discussion, Representative Katie.
Hi, Allison. Good seeing you. I'm kind of interested by this. So you're saying the importance here is merely the connection with the essay through the bind line, not specifically the $1, correct?
Yeah, I think any amount of funding would be good, but we're just requesting a dollar because of, like, you know, previous year's funding applications and also, like, the increase in events that we would host during, like, a non-COVID year.
Okay. Because I think, just to be a little bit frank here, I think some people here have a lot of questions regarding, or our previous discussion about PFC was regarding the relationship of PFC with Byline and some concerns relating to other instances that were brought forward when PFC came originally. So the hope of PFC today then is to continue the relationship with the SA and the SA Byline funding so that door is still open, not specifically the $1, not specifically the 50 cents, not specifically the $6. But the relationship with the SA.
No, yeah, I agree. I'm sorry that the other presidents weren't able to be at this meeting. But yeah, like anything you guys have questions about. And of course, we'd like to continue the relationship with SA because obviously you guys are an important student body and we just would like to work together.
So then what's the purpose of asking for a dollar specifically then, I might ask? That's what I'm trying to build towards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the recommendation was created by our VP of Finance, and based off of like our student budget from like last year or 2 years ago when we were originally given the funding and just like all the costs of the events and stuff, we just think that part of the, our funding definitely goes to the specific organizations itself, like a majority of the funding. And so they'll request money for like philanthropy events or, you know, any of the external and internal events that they want to hold. And so just to be able to enforce, not like enforce, but, you know, like the recommendations we make, to be able to have incentives for organizations to get that funding, we just need funding in general. And we don't have like a specific constituency that will like, you know.
It's not the number, it's the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
So hypothetically, I don't want to motion yet, but a cent. What, is there any thoughts relating to that? It has to be at least 50 cents. Appreciate that. All right. Thank you.
Great. Representative Eisman.
Hi, thank you so much for coming. I just had a question since I think one of the a bigger concern is just for the amount of funding. If all the PFOs were to get funding exclusively from PFC, that a dollar probably wouldn't be enough unless they can't get additional funds from SAFC. So I was wondering if there's been any reconsideration for either removing that stipulation or increasing the requested amount since your original application is at $6.
I think that most of the people on like the PFC council have agreed that like $1 is a good amount in itself. And I think your question was also about like if the specific organizations themselves have any funding, or can you like repeat the first part of your question?
Yeah, I was just curious, like if you were, if PFOs are getting their funding exclusively from PFC directly, like.
Yeah, yeah, it's not exclusive. I think they all have like their own dues for their members specifically, but I think that PFC as a whole would like to also have funding to provide them because there are a lot more like cross fraternity events that are happening, and so like having that and having us be the source of those funds would be useful for those events.
Great. Representative Williams.
Hi. So I guess I kind of wanted to make a comment and then a question. So I see that you guys originally had 50 cents and then you clarified that you wanted a dollar this year. I was just curious, like, what are some of the events that you were hoping to plan? Because I personally would smile upon keeping you on the byline and giving you a little bit more so that we can build this community and this professional community.
Yeah, thank you for the question. So the 50 cents in the original budget from like last year and the year before that was because it was mostly like COVID, and so most of the events were online and stuff. And so obviously like you need money to keep the website going. And then there's also like gonna be guest speakers and stuff. And then there's also like a Canvas module for hazing training and whatnot. But for the future year, obviously like with COVID becoming less and less of an issue for students, we still want the same funding that I just mentioned for like guest speakers, the website, the Canvas module. But I'm sure that a lot of other professional organizations themselves are gonna be hosting a lot more events for both like internal and the Cornell community. And so just because of like the increase of events, we thought it would be right to ask for a 50 cent increase.
Awesome. Representative Juan.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming. I just wanted to make more of a general comment. I think, you know, defunding PFC having only existed for like the past two-ish years, it's just, I just don't think it's fair to say that they're not living up to something that, you know, they've only had 2 years within the span of COVID to kind of act upon. So I would definitely, you know, encourage either funding them at their requested or just, you know, 50 cents as well. So just funding them at least and keeping that connection between us and the student, like them and the student assembly, and seeing them grow in the next couple of years.
Thank you.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Please feel free to, like, bring up a chair. That's it.
Hi there. My name is Carly Boudet. I'm the advisor for the Professional Fraternity Council. So I'm here to help answer questions as well. I know a little bit more historically about the Professional Fraternity Council. It is a relatively new organization. It was voted into existence during the last byline cycle to kind of help combat the competitiveness and the inclusivity issues that PFOs historically have. And so that's kind of why PFC is around, is to kind of help educate and, I wouldn't say mandate and standardize some processes, but they can't do that without funding or education. And so that's kind of where most of the resources the last 2 years have been put into, is providing that educational I wouldn't say pipeline, but then also some of that structure to allow for some of the systematic change to occur over a long time. And the $6 on the initial application was just a mistake. It was just a typo. They were only requesting a dollar, which is a 50 cents increase, but it's only 50 cents increase because SAFC is funding, currently funding, so it goes back to, I think, Dylan's question. SAFC is currently funding some of the professional fraternity organizations, and then also PFC is also funding some of the professional fraternity organizations. And so having funding split between two funding sources kind of creates a barrier for PFC to create some of those mandates that they need to have in terms of accountability.
Awesome. Thank you. Representative Wei.
Yeah, thank you both so much for coming in. So I know a lot of the work that PFC does revolves around consent ed and the anti-bias training that was mentioned earlier. But I also know a lot of people in professional fraternity organizations who don't take that training seriously at all. So I guess my question is kind of like, what does PFC do to kind of like sell consent ed, you know, kind of like the whole reason for their existence?
So I guess being in a professional fraternity myself, I remember we had to do consent ed like freshman year, sophomore year. And I think that the reason some students may not take it as seriously, which I think is wrong, of course, is that they've already done it in the past. And then also they just see themselves as like being knowledgeable about consent ed. Obviously, again, as like PFC, we can't like enforce anyone specifically to do anything. But obviously, like, we have a whole system set up. We have like recommendations. And so if you have any suggestions to, you know, have consent ed be taken more seriously, I would definitely take that. But also, I just think that because people have done it again in the past and stuff like that, and, you know, there, and also in other organizations that they're part of, I think every organization has something about that. I think that's the reason why. But also, like, PFC as a whole, to answer, like, the second part of your question, I guess, acts as more than just, you know, enforcing the training. There's also, like, anti-hazing training for the new member education processes within each of the organizations. And I think in the past year, 97% of all of the people in PFOs have completed that. And so just like having these events and like connecting the greater Cornell professional community is like what PFC stands for as a whole.
Thank you.
And then just to add to that, part of why PFC can't necessarily mandate these trainings is it goes back to the funding. And so because a PFO can decide, oh, well, I can get my funding from SAFC, they don't have any stipulations, they can choose to not be a part of the PFC. And so kind of the goal with this 50 cent increase would allow only PFOs to basically request funding through PFC. And then PFC could say, we have this, we have the mandates, we have the standards, we have these educational trainings that you need to take before you even request funding. And it's like you mentioned, it's not just, you know, anti-hazing or anti-bias or consent ed. They also do implicit bias. They have done multiple sessions with the Dean of Students Office around roundtable. They've done sessions around inclusivity, around recruitment, but then also your recruitment practice could be inclusive. But then after you get members into your organization, what do you do to make sure that you're still creating that space to have these open conversations?
Thank you. Representative Templeman.
I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about like what besides training you have been doing to promote diversity and inclusion, especially given that like a couple months ago, one of the PFC presidents came to specifically request that they don't have to report diversity statistics, which I feel like is an important step for diversity and inclusion. So I just want to see like what like steps are being made.
No, yeah, I totally agree. I can't really speak to what the previous PFO president said about diversity and inclusion, but obviously as the diversity and inclusion chair, I've tried to make measurable steps. Obviously, like I said, there is like some culture around inclusivity and things like that. But in the past year, we've had things like recruitment buddies. And so I think especially for like underrepresented students who don't really have experience in like, you know, whatever industry, whether it be business or law, it's very difficult to even know how to get through the interview process, even know like a coffee chat is. And so kind of putting things like that in place, last spring and this fall, we've had recruitment buddies where everyone who's applying, who expressed interest in getting to know someone within the organization has that instant connection. And I think that that makes a lot of a difference. And it would have made a big difference for me, like joining a PFO my freshman year. Additionally, we've also had this impact report. And last year, there wasn't really good, enforcement on submitting that.
But in the previous, like in spring 2021, when we requested it last, and we're also requesting it this semester, we've just got to know about like how the professional fraternities themselves reflect the Cornell community in terms of, you know, their major, like financial aid, LGBTQ status, like anything such in that realm. And then also having, like, I've really recommended PFOs to do specifically like events that would benefit both internal and external Cornell community, because I definitely see that that's an issue where a lot of the events are geared towards only their members and stuff like that. And obviously everyone else wants to, you know, develop their career and whatnot. And so having these events and kind of checking up on them, also having round tables, and, you know, we had someone come in who, you know, administered like an implicit bias test so that people could share that within their organizations, but as the D&I chairs themselves could understand that. But obviously there's like so much work to be done, and that hopefully the next D&I chair and the rest of the organization continues after like our term is over. But I really do hope that we've made some kind of strides at D&I, just because I know it's important. And, you know, that's a really big issue. Like, the, I would say like one of the main issues that PFOs face on campus.
Okay. I'll take one last question, Representative Williams, and then.
This is a motion, not a question.
Okay, great. What's the motion?
I would like to motion to overturn the Appropriations Committee recommendation.
Is there a second? Or did people not hear the motion?
I got a second.
Oh, you got a second. Oh. Yeah, I think so. I appreciate that.
So now we vote.
No motion. So there's no second.
We have to overturn it before we can change the number.
I'm sorry. No, she did get a second down there. I don't know if you're the person.
She's an ex-official member, so she's not.
Then I'll second it.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. But.
Oh, so you're saying they're allowed to second but not vote?
Carson.
Give me one second.
If it matters, it says Chair Bonta, I can just second the motion.
Okay, so either way, there's been a second, but we'll clarify the ex officio thing. Thanks so much, Delilah. Okay, all those in favor of that motion? Yeah, because there's a second. All those in favor to overturn. Do people like hear the motion? Okay. I'm just like making sure. Great. So, yeah. Motion.
It's just to overturn the zero. It's not a specific number yet.
Just to overturn the zero. Great. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 7. All those against. Great. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 11. All those abstaining? 1, 2, 3, 4. Can you repeat that? Can you say that to the mic?
You can only abstain if you're on PFC's e-board or you have some sort of like financial conflict. So
yeah.
Clarify.
That is true. So that should be the reason you should be abstaining. 1, 2. Can you raise if your flags are abstaining? Okay, great. So can you? 3, 4. Okay, Madison. That's 22. And then we have a vote on the flag. So that's against 12. So that's 23. And then we had 9 on Zoom. So on a vote on 7-12-4, that motion fails. Representative or ex-official member Hernandez.
Yeah, I just have more of a question for you guys. I guess, could we make any stipulations in terms of like what requirements you have to meet, since the funding that you're getting is meant to be like for every student in Cornell to pretty much use in some ways? I know you said that there is some strive to have like external and internal events because it seems to be mostly geared towards internal. So can we make requirements for you to meet since these funds are meant for every student?
You asked if we can make requirements for like the PFOs to use the money?
Yeah, so to meet external events, for example, like a set amount, could we do that?
Yeah, like my goal that I've set out for most of the organizations, which obviously I can't enforce, but a lot of organizations have been doing this, is to have 2 events per semester.
And with there being like 16 plus professional organizations specializing in different fields, hopefully this happens. And over time, I think students will get to know the members, get to know their career field, make more decisions involving that. And so hopefully, you know, with funding that could work.
Point of information from Representative Wade.
Yeah, I think your question to answer, can we stipulate funding? That's a change to their Appendix B bylines, and that requires a resolution by a voting member of the SA.
Great, thanks
for that.
Okay, I'll like highly favor on a motion because we've been at this for quite some time. Representative Wade.
Motion to approve the allocation at $0.
So we would just have to motion to vote on the allocation, which is.
Yeah, motion to vote on the allocation.
Seconded.
Great, there's been a motion to vote on the allocation of $0. There's been a second. All those in favor? So that's 12. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven, all those abstaining? 3, 4, 4. Okay. On a vote of 12-7-4, that motion passes. So $0 allocation.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for coming to answer the questions. We really appreciate it. Representative Clark.
I have looked. There is nothing specifically forbidding an ex officio member from seconding a motion. However, the definition of an ex officio is a non-voting member of the student assembly. Whether or not a second is a voting privilege is not specifically defined in those laws, so it's up to you to vote on whether it is. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a hard stop at 6:30. I have a prelim at 7. So for the next one, I don't want to like rush you, but.
Okay, I'm just going to say we have like 7 bylaw reports to go through. But for the next one, it's students helping students, and Annie has the report for that. And we also have.
Hello. My name is Ezigo Nanye. I am the chair of the Financial Aid Review Committee, better known as FARC. We manage the Students Helping Students Fund, as well as the Summer Experience Grant. I'm here to request consideration of appeal for my committee's byline allocation for the 2022-2024 byline funding cycle. The Students Helping Students Fund is one of the few places on campus that students are able to receive financial aid during emergency. The Financial Aid Review Committee strives to assist our community by funding emergency expenses, including, but not limited to, travel expenses relating to unknown circumstances, such as sudden death of family or relative, extra basic living expenses needed during a fire, destruction, or natural disaster, and emergency medical or dental expenses that are otherwise not covered by insurance. With this fund, we can lend a hand to the community, let students focus on being students. Our committee requested to an allocation for the byline for $5 this year, but our request was reduced to $1 and through the 2022-2024 byline cycle. Our committee's allocation from 2020 to 2022 was $5, and we would like to request an increase, the byline allocation to be from $1 to $3.75. The Cornell class of 2023, 2024, and 2025 have had very limited exposure to Cornell campus and the amenities that this university provides. The Financial Aid Review Committee strives to increase awareness of our fund to students who are unaware of the incredible resources that this campus offers. As we saw last week with a bomb threat, in addition to a school shooter threat, Cornell students need to have access in case of emergencies. By decreasing the fund, we will not be able to meet the demand of the community and our community members' needs. Money is a consistent barrier to students' education, and by decreasing this fund, we as a community directly contradict the Cornell motto of any person can find instruction in any study. The decrease in the byline allocation allows for students to fall through the cracks due to one emergency or another, and we should work to help everyone that calls themselves a Cornellian. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Awesome. Okay, so we'll put a time limit on this, 30 seconds for discussion and 45 seconds for response. Great. Representative Gooberman, do you have something to say?
Can I request additional speaking time to go over, like, to for, like, the committee's rationale? Can I have a minute, please?
Yeah. Okay.
So I just kind of want to explain the committee's rationale. So this is not about, like, limiting the amount of students that can receive funding from the Students Helping Students grant. I really want people to read the report and see that with the Appropriations Committee recommendation, for the next 3 years, the committee could fund more than four times what it funds in a current year. They have a huge rollover, and we are giving them, and the committee recommendation gives them significant room to help more students than ever before. So I really just want people to read the report and kind of read the rationale and see the committee's, see where the committee came, and also this committee's commitment to increasing the summer experience grant, which we already did at the start of the semester.
Great. Do you want to respond to that?
To that notion, yes, we did have a large rollover from the 2020 to 2022 cycle. But as I said before, this is because class of 2023, this is their second full semester on campus. Class of 2022, this is their first full year on campus. 2025 is yet to have any exposure. So the 2020 to 2022 byline cycle, I'm saying that rollover will help in addition to what money that we're trying to request now.
Thank you. Representative Williams?
Yeah, I just wanted to say quickly, like, as somebody who could have benefited from this program and wasn't really aware of it, I think that it's ridiculous that we want to defund this, where this is emergency funding. So this rollover is just going to help, let them help more students. Like, somebody, more people could have fires this year. Like, we don't know what's going to come up. So I guess my recommendation is just, I really hope that we fully fund you and that you guys do a little more advertising too. Thank you.
Great. Representative, I know Everest, I don't know your last name.
Yan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, they can respond. Since that was like a comment, I wasn't sure if you wanted to respond.
Yeah, so my primary goal this year as Financial Aid Review Committee is to work with different outlets on campus, specifically the student advocate, who I think we may talk about this afterwards, but the fact that a lot of students don't really know about this incredible fund, and since we have such a large rollover, I want to expand a bit of the Students Helping Students grants, so students have the ability to obtain resources in need of emergency.
Great. Thank you, Representative Yan.
Thank you. Sorry if my comment is a bit ignorant, because I'm not exactly sure. I feel like the prerogative of financial aid should be a university, and I'm not sure why the responsibility has fallen on students to fund financial aid when it, quite frankly, should be the university's job. And do you think that the funding organization disincentivizes the university in being more generous with financial aid?
No, I do not believe so. So our, what we give financial aid to we can't give financial aid to like necessarily housing and stuff that the actual financial aid committee at Cornell University allocates to. These are in case of emergencies, which the university doesn't give financial aid to either way. If that clears it up for you.
Representative Templeman.
Yeah, so I just wanted to hear, because the fund has seen historically very low demand, which is like concerning given the fact that there are many students that do have need on campus. And so I wanted to hear if you have any like potential steps to increase, you know, applications for the fee, like through like partnering with other organizations or like advertising campaigns. Like do you have any steps that you want to implement this year?
Yeah, so those steps are going to be taken as soon as we figure out our byline funding. The first thing I was going to do was meet with a student advocate to see if there are different outlets and resources that we can spread the news about this. In addition to, we've been having a lot of town halls recently based on stuff that's been happening at Cornell University, and I want to come to these and make it very open and accessible to students that they know that this is fun. In addition to reaching out to other clubs and communities on campus that I feel would have the need for their members to be a part of this.
Great.
So technically I'm part of like Students Helping Students too. And I was just gonna add, we're planning on partnering with ALANA, which is like the multicultural like board and everything. We have over like 120 different clubs, right? We have like a bunch of members, right? And I just want to emphasize that Students Helping Students is used by obviously students that could not pay for these emergencies otherwise, right? Those students tend to look like us, right? Students of color, first gen students. So I just want to clarify that if you're lowering the allocation for Students Helping Students, you're already hurting the students that are struggling the most at this university.
Representative Mullen.
Yeah, thank you. I would just like to agree with everything that was said before. It's absolutely insane that we're proposing to underfund an organization that students desperately need on this campus after everything that we've already talked about. I just want to ask a direct question to you. I know you mentioned that your proposal is for $350, but is SHS generally in favor if there is a motion to overturn this recommendation and fund at the full $5? Would that be something
Yes.
You're not opposed to that?
Okay. I would be very in support of that.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wade.
Yeah, so I guess it's a comment and a question. So similarly last year, I had to travel home in an emergency and I applied to the financial aid office to something that's different than the Student Helping Students Fund. So my question is kind of like, it kind of goes back to the point earlier when I think it was Representative Yang who asked the question, should this fall on the Office of Financial and Student Aid? My question is how is Students Helping Students different from existing emergency funding mechanisms that exist on campus?
So last year wasn't here last year, of course, but the primary reason that we differentiate is because it puts more of a humanistic approach to this whole scenario and the idea that students know what students are going through. Depending on a case by case, students know that in addition to having exams, quizzes, lectures, we know how students truly feel and that these are needed resources that the financial aid may not know about.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, so the rollover is more than just what I think we can account for in terms of this COVID funding cycle. So that side of things makes me less prone to want to support any kind of increased funding. I think the dollar is even potentially generous. I'm not trying to minimize the impact of Students Helping Students. I think it's fantastic. And it does support good things. In the past, has been joked, though, that it's Student Assembly's way of funding for wisdom teeth. I love to tell people that because we pay for a lot of wisdom teeth or have in the past through it, which is interesting. But I think I'd love to see Students Helping Students prove us wrong and, fund at the dollar, prove the Student Assembly wrong, come to us, ask for special projects funding if next year you spend through your entire budget. And I'm sure that the Student Assembly would give you more money outside of the byline. I think we have that in our discretion, and I think that'd be a better course of action.
Yeah, you can respond.
Yeah, to that point, if we start using our allocated money, then we deplete into these resources, then we would have to apply again to get more money. Having this bandwidth so that any student at any point in time, we can really help them out would be significantly better than having to go through a lot of steps of refunding ourselves during the 2020 to 2024 cycle.
Representative Longo.
Yeah, I just want to say that, thank you for coming. I just want to sort of point out that I think there's a lot of talk right now about whether or not the university
Do you want to use another mic?
Okay, thanks for coming.
Yep, you can go ahead.
Okay, thanks for coming. I just want to point out that I think there's a lot of talk right now about whether or not this should be, this burden should fall on the university or whether or not it should fall on SAFC through like byline stuff. I think like through what just happened with President Pollack and Vice President Lombardi talking to us, I think it's very clear that the university isn't necessarily going to pick up these burdens on their own if we decide we are going to defund. The only scenario in which we should even consider defunding SHS is if we have a pre-existing commitment from the university to pick up the slack in that regard. We don't have that in this case. I think it would be extremely dangerous, especially given that we are still in uncertain times and that like this funding specifically could help mostly, and I don't need to tell any of you this, mostly like underprivileged students on campus, like students of color on campus who are the people who need this the most. In that vein, because we are also running really, really short on time, I do want to motion that we overturn the, I do want to motion that we overturn this decision. We can decide on whether or not we want it to be $5, $3, $3.50, whatever, but I motion that we overturn.
Awesome, there's been a second, but before we go on, Kira, do we have quorum still?
I think so.
19 and 20, if we count Manai on Zoom. So, minus Henry, who's, you're leaving? Yeah. How many? You still have quorum? Great. Awesome. So we're in voting then. Great. All those in favor? Dissent. Can you state your reason for dissent?
I feel that there's been some information spoken that hasn't, there's additional context needed to some information before voting. Oh,
so was
I also say it. So I don't know if you guys remember, but when the VP of Finance came to speak, he said that anyone can show up to the office and say, I need, like this emergency happened, I need funding, and they will get a check. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was what was clearly, it was said pretty clearly to us that that was a mechanism the university is offering right now.
My friend, that's not the case. I've like seen it firsthand, but I would like to pass off to Representative Lango.
Yeah, I just want to say that when the VP of Finance came to talk to us, he said that that financial aid would try to work with the students to figure out an alternative solution. There was no guarantee that funding would be given. Obviously, that's where an organization like SHS could come in with a more humane perspective and provide immediate funding if necessary. So with that in mind, I don't know, I resubmit the motion to overturn.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that same thing. Like, my parents have done it. They haven't gotten funding. If that was the case, like, everyone would be rich at that point, but that's not how it works explicitly. So all those in favor of the motion, please raise the placard. Okay, that's 13. All those against?
4.
Or those abstaining?
1, 2, 3, 4.
4. On a vote of... Abstain, yeah. Did you vote against?
Is a point of inquiry to the parliamentarian, is there anywhere in the bylaws that says I have to abstain?
I mean... Yeah. Yeah, so that's...
Can you vote for... Go ahead. Can you use that mic, please?
Okay, I abstain. You don't have to...
Well, what did you vote for? Did you affirm or vote against? Okay, great. So that's 13-3-5. It passes. We are overturning the appropriations recommendation. Representative Mullen?
Motion to fund at $5.
Second.
Great. There's been a motion to fund $5. There's been a second. All those in favor, please raise your placard. All those opposed? 6. All those abstaining? 4. On a vote of 12-6-4, the motion of funding $5 passes. Congratulations, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you do. Great. We have 8 minutes. We got to go.
Can we motion to extend by like 10 minutes, maybe?
We'll lose quorum because people are freelance, including me. And so...
Okay. So if we don't present these and vote on these, we like risk not meeting the deadline by the charter for byline. So we can do this really quickly if you guys want.
Yeah.
We need to vote on one report, and then I have to go over 5 reports that we're going to vote on for next week.
We need to vote on one report or 5 reports?
Vote on one report, and then just hear from 5.
5. Okay, let's vote on the one report.
Okay, so it's CUPB. They asked for $13.56. We discussed this last week, so just we can do whatever. It's on the box. It should be on the box.
Representative Overton? CUPB.
Yeah. The Cornell University Programming Board.
Seeing as the Appropriations Committee gave them their full allocation of funding, I motion to vote on this immediately.
All those in favor, please raise your flag.
They didn't. Yeah, okay, great.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 16, 17. All those against? All those abstaining? 2. On a vote of 17-0-2, that passes for CUPB. Great.
Okay, and now we just have to vote on one last one, I promise. It's the Cornell Concert Commission, $13.50, their full allocation.
Yep. Representative. Motion to table to the next meeting?
No, this one we vote on. So that was my mistake, but we vote on this one.
So we have 2 to vote on.
Yeah.
The second, great. All those in favor?
Second.
All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. 15, all those opposed? That's 1. All those abstaining? That's 2. On a vote, what's the name of it?
Cornell Concert Commission.
CCC?
Mm-hmm.
Great. So on a vote of 15-1-2, that passes.
Okay, so now we move on to class councils. They asked for $8.35. We recommended $7.40. The rationale is on the box. We don't vote on this. We just discuss it.
Yeah, I'm thinking, should we just go ahead, Representative Lane?
I'm just going to motion to table that.
Perfect. Second, by unanimous consent.
By unanimous consent.
Any dissent? Sick.
Okay, so now it's...
Wait. Oh. I apologize. Wrong time, wrong place.
Yeah, so it's CU Tonight Commission. They asked for $9, and the committee recommended 7.
Representative Overton?
Motion to table. By unanimous consent.
Dissent by Representative Smith. Can you say your dissent?
Yeah, first, I don't think we should. I'm having second thoughts about the whole tabling thing because most of the other organizations, we've discussed them the first time and the second time. I feel like we're kind of doing these a disservice now just because we want to get out of here. So I think that's kind of the wrong motivation because most of the other organizations we've given enough, I guess, effort of our time to consider and have some comments the night of. So.
That's completely fair. I would say that we're not forcing anyone to like vote. So if you want to say something about it before someone like motions, feel free to go ahead. I'm not like muting you. So just something to note. A good point, Representative Overton.
My information just respond to Representative Smith. That was not the purpose. The purpose is that we have to have a hard stop at 6:30. And if we don't do this, that means that we don't get to discuss it next week. Even like we have an opportunity to discuss it before we vote on it at the next meeting. And obviously, I would never want to just vote on giving an allocation about discussing something, but we do have a hard stop in like 5 minutes, as the chair has discussed earlier. So I just kind of want to ensure that we're able to get this through to next meeting.
Wendy?
Just
one other point of information. Not only is the hard stop, but your quorum is 16, and I think you are at 18 or 19 now. So that's the other thing to keep in mind.
Okay. Thank you for that, Wendy. Appreciate it. Representative Williams?
I'd like to resubmit the motion to table this to the next meeting.
Is that by nine?
Yes. No,
actually, we can vote on it.
Let's vote.
Yeah, I think there might be some. Thirteen. All those opposed? Three. All those abstaining? Two. 3-2, that passes, so that's tabled. Since that, okay, feel free, go ahead.
Okay, so now we have club insurance. We did hear from them before, but then we heard new information about like the university's inability to pay for club insurance. So we went back in our decision and we decided to fully fund them at $5.50.
Representative Williams,
motion to table this to the next meeting.
Do we table this since you changed the allocation?
Yeah, we have to table it.
Okay. Should we vote? Or can we do unanimous? All those in favor?
Seven.
17.
Oh.
All those opposed? 17 to 2. The math is a math. 3. 17 to 3 to 2. Great. That math. Okay. It passes. It's tabled.
Okay. And then lastly, we have Cornell Minds Matter. They asked for $2.50. We recommended $1.63. And this was the cut that they actually suggested because of the rollover. But yeah, $1.63.
Representative Williams?
Motion to table to the next meeting.
Oh, all those in favor? Fourteen. All those opposed. Got it. 1, 2, 3. 3. All those abstaining. That's great. 2, 14 to 3 to 2. That passes. It's tabled. Representative Katie. Second. She has to go on quorum. It's like great.
A point.
Representative what? Eisman.
There's still a motion on the floor. Are we doing a vote to vote or no?
We've already voted.
Okay, I'd like to motion to adjourn then.
I had a point.
What's the point of information?
Do we have to go over Outdoor Odyssey?
Oh.
We did we not?
I don't think we did it today.
Okay. It's in the box.
20 seconds on the clock.
Yeah, so Outdoor Odyssey, we don't have to vote on them this week either. It's on the box. So.
Representative Eisen.
Motion to table this, please, to next meeting.
All those in favor, we have 10 seconds.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12.
All those against? 1, 2, 3. All those abstaining? 12 to 3 to 2. It passes.
Second.
Dissent? Have a great night, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.